The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So good evening, everyone. And it has been 2 or 3 weeks since I've been here. And it seems like a long time ago now I said I was going to do a series. And then I began it, and then I left, and I continued it, and I left, and probably no one remembers we're having doing a series. It probably doesn't matter so much. But the series is just going to go through a list of different emotions, common emotions that people have, and try to look at a little bit from the point of view of mindfulness and Buddhism. And the first two emotions we did were fear and anger. I think we spent 2 weeks on each, I believe. And I thought that after spending so much time on these so-called challenging emotions, it's time to talk about something a little more uplifting. So the often the corollary emotion to anger in Buddhism is loving kindness. And there's a very famous, somewhat famous manual, meditation manual in our tradition, called the from the 5th century, called the Path of Purification. And there's a long section in there about loving kindness and the practice of loving kindness. But the big bulk of that chapter has to do with how to work with anger, because anger is such a block to cultivating loving-kindness or having loving-kindness, and somebody has to come to terms with anger. So we took care of that nicely a few weeks ago, and so now we're ready to move on to the topic of loving-kindness. The Pali word is, before I just talk about it, Buddhism kind of makes a distinction between two classes of emotions. And sometimes in Buddhist English is called afflictive emotions. And these are the emotions that afflict us, that cause us suffering. And then there's those which are beautiful emotions. In the Abhidharma, they talk about beautiful states of mind that we can have. The afflictive ones are often seen as being reactive emotions. They're emotions that arise in reaction to, especially in kind of a negative reaction to things in the world we don't like or they're difficult. And then there's those emotions which are not reactive but rather are responsive. So for example, if something happens that I don't like and I get angry, that's a reaction to that thing that happened I didn't like. If I see something that's really wonderful and I want it and I get greedy for it, that greed happens in reaction to that beautiful thing that I see. So it's a reaction to things. Another class of emotions, we say are more responsive, arise out of some deeper wellspring or a different part of the brain, where we're not reacting to things, but rather it's more the innate response or the goodwill or the goodness of the mind that's responding in a way that doesn't require, that we don't lose control. Reactive emotions, we lose some kind of control. So something's operating within us and we don't know why we did it, why we do it. Or suddenly we're angry and the anger kind of takes over in a sense. And we don't have seemingly much control of what we do or we think or how we feel. Responsive emotions come with a much higher level of self-awareness and also a greater sense of ability to choose and to decide and to be present for what's going on rather than kind of a slave of the feelings and emotions we have. So loving kindness belongs to the second category. It's a beautiful state of mind. It's more responsive. And it can arise sometimes clearly in response to things around us. But it can also arise completely independent of anything going on in the world. There can be very strong states of love or of kindness that arise, bubbling up from inside, almost as if it's there's a wellspring fountain that's kind of gushing within the side of us that's just been turned on, and it has no reason. It is there without any reason. usually with afflictive emotions like anger or greed, there's kind of a reason almost you could kind of point to perhaps, or something, some attachment, something that's going on. The word is metta in Pali and in Buddhist language. It's M-E-T-T-A. And it's a little bit ambiguous how that should be translated into English. Most commonly it's translated by two words, loving and kindness, hyphenated, so loving kindness. Other choices have been used over time. If I could think of some, sometimes people like to use the word kindness and drop the love. Some people like the word friendliness. Some people have used a little more archaic words like, I don't remember exactly, but amicable, something like that. And what? Amicable, maybe? Something like that. Yeah. So the word metta is cognate to the word mitta, and mitta means friend. And so it comes from this, kind of very closely connected, the idea of being a friend and having this feeling of loving kindness. Translating as kindness makes it more humble. Love makes it kind of grand. You know, it's supposed to have a great feeling. But kindness is a little bit more intentional. It's like an attitude towards something. An attitude of friendliness or kindness. Whereas love is sometimes a mystery. You know, it's and the word love in English, you know, has so many different meanings. And if you read people who write about love, they talk about all the different kinds of love. There's eros and agape and philia from the Greek language. And in, and so what kind of love are we talking about? We talk about loving kindness. And I think, you know, I don't know, I've never come across a really good definition of love. Has anybody come up with a good definition of love? Or we just take for granted we know what we're talking about? Yes, please.
Well, it's not my definition, but it's Leo Biscaglia.
What does he say? I'll repeat it then.
Wanting the best and highest spiritual growth and happiness for another human being.
So wanting that best and the highest spiritual happiness and growth for another human being. Sounds pretty good. Leo Biscaglia. Yeah. That's nice. And that would be a very nice definition for the Buddhist idea of loving kindness, and so that works well. I think, you know, loving kindness is the primary definition of loving kindness in Buddhism, is intending or wanting well-being and welfare for someone else. And the subtext in Buddhism is that for Buddhists that means the highest spiritual growth, the highest possible liberation and freedom. But to really wish so, loving kindness is more about. It's not so much about loving somebody or oneself in and of itself, just love, but it has to do with an intentionality of wanting something really good and wonderful for the people we know, for ourselves and for others. So, and it's a little bit different than how some people operate when they're in love. When it seems like sometimes a few people, maybe none of you, but that love is very, very intimately connected to desire. And not desire for someone else's welfare, but desire for what I want. You know, I want to be connected. I want the pleasure of that relationship. I want something in this. Rather than purely thinking about what's best for the other person, it's what, you know, what I want, when my desires are paramount sometimes in the experience of love for some people. And that's because love is so many different things. Because the word is such a vague word, or such an umbrella word in English, it includes so many different things within it. In Buddhism, I like to think that there's four primary forms of love. And loving kindness is joined to make a whole package of love with compassion, appreciative joy or sympathetic joy, and equanimity. And these are called, it's sometimes called divine abodes, or Brahma Viharas, abiding like the god Brahma, because, and so sometimes people call it divine abodes. The closer you get in Buddhism to being divine, is to the divinity, is by experiencing these beautiful states when they're very strong and very powerful. One of the aspects of love in Buddhism, these four categories of love, is that they're not left to chance. And they're not a matter of just falling in love. It's, you know, just chemistry works. I'm sometimes bumbling around my life, and then suddenly I felt all this loving kindness. And that was nice, and it lasted for a few minutes, and then something else arose. So rather than just leaving it to chance, in Buddhism it's a practice, there's a practice that's connected to each of these four, especially to loving kindness, where it's cultivated and developed. So rather than falling into love, it might be more, in terms of these kinds of divine abodes, we're stepping into love. There's an intentionality where we actually choose to go in that direction. And that some of that comes from evaluation, from consideration. It's a good idea to operate from goodwill. It's a good idea to operate from kindness in the world. It's a good idea to be concerned with people's welfare. It's a good idea to have compassion. And if that's a good idea, if that's a wise thing to do, how can we tap into a sincere or authentic form of loving kindness or compassion or joy within us rather than just wait for it to happen to happen? It just happens to happen because, you know, the right circumstances, the right people we feel it for. One of the very interesting aspects of loving kindness, this idea of attitude of kindness in Buddhism, is that it's not dependent. It's not dependent on liking someone. Usually, love is, people think that love and liking go together, but the loving kindness, you don't have to like a person, and the person doesn't have to be, you know, a pleasant person. You know, or maybe that's maybe not a nice way of saying it, but someone who does pleasant things. Loving kindness is not dependent so much on the nature of the person or approving of the person, but rather is some wish that sees through that and sees that this person, as all people, has a capacity for inner beauty, for inner joy and delight, and that will be a beautiful thing to have, for that person to have it. In fact, sometimes there are some Buddhists who say that the person you should have the most loving kindness for is your enemy, for your own selfish purposes. Because if your enemy is really happy, chances are they'll treat you well. So the idea of cultivating or extending oneself to have this kind feelings, generous feelings towards someone, it's not dependent on whether we like them or not like them. And it's quite beautiful to establish that kindness outside of the realm of liking and not liking. And in the cultivation of loving kindness as a practice, the practice becomes mature in a person when the loving kindness can be there, regardless of whether we like the person or not like the person. It's just there. We have this goodwill for the people. I was first introduced to the practice of loving kindness when I was started doing Vipassana practice. And I had done years of Zen practice before doing Vipassana. And in Zen, they don't do these sentimental, sweet practices of loving kindness. And when I was introduced to it, I first heard it, I thought, this is bizarre. Because it seems too artificial to sit there and kind of wish this feelings of loving kindness to be there, to have this goodwill. And it just seemed too artificial. It's not something you can make happen. I thought it just was something that was there. It was there to be authentic. It had to just kind of be there on its own. And you didn't evoke it. So the teachers would talk about it, and they do guided loving kindness meditations, and I just tune them out. That was convenient, just. And until, in the course of doing Vipassana practice, my heart softened. One of the blockages to feeling love or kindness is resistance, is hardness, is contraction, is fear, is greed, is anger, is ill will. It's a whole kind of crusts on the heart. And as we sit and practice in meditation, one of the functions of it is to begin to... meditation is like a tenderizer of these crusts. And so it softens the heart. And so the crusts that that limit or interfere with the heart's own radiance begins to dissolve. And then I was quite surprised to discover this amazing, strong feelings of kindness, of love, of compassion that was kind of beginning to kind of flow through me in a beautiful way. And then I guess it didn't occur to me to tune out the teachers anymore. And so then I heard what they were saying. Oh, I know what they're talking about. That's what I'm experiencing right now. And then I got much more interested, and then I was willing to listen or pay attention to those teachings. And then I found, actually, that it was a beautiful practice. So I was kind of slow in learning the value of it because I had to kind of bubble up inside. Other people have been much quicker on the uptake than me. And perhaps they had easier access than I had or something. Or just it was more made more sense. I think, that's my belief, from my experience, that mindfulness itself will lead to a deep experience of love or of kindness and compassion that will bubble up inside of us as a result of doing this practice. But we also don't have to wait for that to happen. It's also possible to intentionally take up the practice of loving kindness. And there's a whole series of ways of doing it. One way is to realize that loving kindness doesn't depend on feeling love or feeling kind, but rather the core of it has to do with a simple, almost cognitive intention, a wish that someone be happy, someone be well, to wish kind, to have these kind wishes towards someone. And so it begins by simply having a little turn in our thinking, in our inner consideration. What would be the best for the person I'm with? Can I now give some thought to what's best for that person, as opposed to giving thought about what I can get from that person, or think about how I should be afraid of that person, or think about how I should take advantage of that person, or think about how I should impress the person. There's a lot of things people think about when they're in relationship to other people that maybe it's okay, but there's other things to think about, other ways of thinking, other perspectives to have on other people. And to simply look at someone, to be with someone, and start thinking, what would be the best thing for this person right now? What would be the most supportive thing for this person? So it can be as simple, it can be as kind of radical perhaps, or simple, or as mundane, I don't know what, as standing at a checkout counter at a store and taking in the clerk that's there and looking, what's my relationship to this clerk? Well, my relationship is, this person doesn't count, I just want to get out of here. No, please be quicker. That's one way of relating. Or, I hope the person doesn't ask me how I am. Or it could, I hope they're not, looking at what I'm buying. I mean, I don't know what you think, but it's possible to actually stand there intentionally and say, and take it on as a practice, what would it like to be standing here, taking in this person, the humanity of the person, and give some thought to what would be the most supportive thing for this person now? What are the best things I can wish this person right now? Simply asking that question and considering it, well, I think for many, many situations, will bring about a change of heart. Simply to ask that question. It doesn't mean you have to have love for them, but just simply ask that question, a change of heart comes into place. And if you do that regularly and start asking yourself those questions around people you're with, It's a private, it can be a very private practice, even secret. You don't have to tell anybody you're doing it. But you're beginning to, you actively begin considering what would be the best for this person, what would be most supportive for them, as opposed to what's best for me in this situation, what can I get out of this. So to turn around, have that question. And to do it a lot through the day, you'll probably find that it begins changing not only your mood, it probably over time also changes your character. Because the character in that, and what you kind of come to automatically, what rises out of you almost spontaneously when you're with people, is maybe closer to character. So what's best for other people? And then the second thing to do is to act on it. Is actually do something that's kind. You're standing there with a clerk. What would be most supportive of them here and now? Perhaps what would be nice is just tell them thank you. That was a good job. That was nice. Thank you. That was quick. Or I'm fine. How are you? Maybe just asking how they are is a nice thing to do. It doesn't take much from you to ask them how they are. It's probably safe with a clerk because they're not going to give you a long answer. But you know, it shows them you care. And then with friends, you know, what can you do that is supportive for them? And then there's a lot of other kind of practices that follow in the wake of that question. There might be the practice of generosity. Maybe you do something generous for the person. Maybe inquire how they are. Maybe just your demeanor, how you are towards the person changes, and you're more open and present. In a way, you kind of hear them and see them and be with them in a more full way. Maybe that's all it is, a change. But it's important to act on it in some way, not just to consider what's best for the person, to have that goodwill, to find out what does it mean to have goodwill towards someone, but then find ways to act on it. It's important to do it if what you want to do is develop your capacity for love, if you want to step into loving kindness, if you want to kind of take somehow... not just wait for it to be chance, but to actually take some responsibility for it. If you're not interested in that, of course, you don't have to practice it. But so that's, you know, in daily life. It can be done in a lot of small ways. And then in Buddhism, we have a meditation practice of loving kindness. And that is to intentionally in meditation, in a kind of concentrated way you can do in meditation, turn your thoughts and your mind and your heart over to generating feelings and thoughts and wishes of goodwill for someone else. And here again, it begins by evoking an intention or an aspiration or a wish for someone's welfare. To realize inside of ourselves, it'd be really nice if my friend was happy. It'd be really nice if my relative had some peace. It'd be really nice if they were healthy. That would be a good thing. And I wish it for them. In spite of everything else, I wish it for them. So to find that within ourselves, so it's almost a cognitive thing. It's something we do with our thoughts and our inner life. So it doesn't depend on finding some sweet feeling inside of ourselves. Feelings are almost secondary to this. And then taking that intention and expressing it in meditation through silent words in our mind. So to keep the person in mind, have the wish there for them, and then to express it, and we express it through very short phrases. It's the closest we get in our tradition to a Buddhist prayer. We don't use prayer, but use the word prayer, but it has some of the same power in the psyche as prayer has for people who pray. It's a very powerful thing to do. And it's done by saying simple phrases. Usually it's four phrases. The phrases I use is, may you be happy. May you be safe. May you be healthy. And may you be at ease. Or may you be peaceful. And so you say those words. And you say them over and over again. Not rotely, not kind of an automatic and mechanically. But each time you say it, you try to say it being connected to that wish inside. You know, if you lose touch with that wish, it's a good idea for them to be happy, then stop saying the phrase and see if you can kind of find that, think your way back or find your way back to that wish again, that feeling that's a good idea. And once you find that, then express it. As we express it and open to it, then sometimes loving feelings might arise. Warm, supportive, kind feelings. Wonderful feelings might happen. Occasionally what happens is the opposite. Because sometimes when the crusts on the heart get dissolved, underneath it, it's not all good in there. Sometimes it can be a repressed or hidden anger that can come out. And the practice is not, the practice of loving kindness is not a failure if anger is the result. It just means that anger has been dislodged, and now we have to kind of work with it. It's a purification practice, so now we have to kind of work through it. But sometimes very strong feelings of love or kindness or warmth or delight or joy or a whole combination of those arise together with the feeling of with this practice. And what's quite astounding, I think, is that as this practice of loving kindness develops, the intensity of this feeling of love becomes extremely strong, becomes all pervading. It feels like your whole being is pervaded with feelings of kind of loving kindness, this soft kind of tenderness, and delightful light, joy. Joyful tenderness of kindness, and then also as it gets stronger, it even feels like it's not just your whole body, but it kind of radiates from you and kind of extends in all directions in all ways. It's quite something to develop this when the mind gets very concentrated around this particular theme, around this particular attitude of loving kindness, because when the mind gets concentrated, it becomes unified, and when it becomes unified, it means that everything in our being, all the different faculties we have, are all unified and focused on the particular theme or the focus of the meditation. And the focus of meditation is love, and our whole being is organized and focused around that particular thing, then it's really astoundingly beautiful. It's maybe a little bit unfortunate that for some people, one of the clearest examples of being unified and collected and organized around one particular thing sometimes is around anger. Sometimes when people get really angry and furious, everything is organized around that anger, their whole body and their feelings and intentions and thoughts, and everything's burning. With loving kindness, it's this beautiful, healthy kind of thing that we're focused on. And so the results are often quite healthy as well. I've read a little bit. There hasn't been a lot of scientific studies, clinical studies on loving kindness practice, but there's been a few, and there was one where they measured the T cells, which has to do with how strong your immune system is, of people who, I think they watched a documentary about Mother Teresa, and then they watched some kind of horror movie, I think, or some kind of documentary about horror or something, horrible things. And they found that the people who watched the Mother Teresa film, which is about compassion and kindness, I suppose, their T cells went up quite a bit compared to the ones who watched the kind of the more fearful documentary or something. So what the mind does, the kind of activities of the mind, the feelings, the emotions we live by, affect our health as well. And I have a strong belief that loving kindness is very healthy for ourselves. And one of the reasons to do it, one of the reasons to wish kindness to others, to be kind to others, is because the benefits we get from it. It doesn't have to be selfish to do it for your own benefit. It can be, so you have to be a little bit careful. But don't consider that being kind to yourself is important. And so, in fact, one of the ways it's classically taught, the loving kindness practice, is to start with oneself. And the rationale for that is that if you start developing kindness and good wishes and goodwill towards yourself, then you have a resource or a reference point inside of yourself to be able to do better for someone else. If you leave yourself out, feel like you don't deserve it, if you feel like you're the one person in the world who doesn't deserve loving kindness, that you're kind of rotten, whatever, inadequate or unworthy of it, then it's very hard actually to find within ourselves the place that allows us to have real empathy for someone else. Empathy for someone else depends a lot on being able to have some reference point, some wholeness within ourselves for that. So what we want is them to be happy in a genuine way. It really helps if we be able to want ourselves to be happy as well. So in that regard, wanting, having loving kindness for oneself is not seen as being selfish. It's setting up the foundation for being able to offer something very strong to other people. Doing loving kindness toward oneself is very healing for a lot of people who do have a lot of problems with self-worth, self-criticism, self-loathing, all kinds of problems that many people have. And to realize that it's okay and to do it towards oneself, and to realize that it's important to do it, that we're worthy to receive that kind of care, can be very healing. But it's also very important not to stop with oneself, and to realize that's a springboard to being able to do loving kindness towards others, and then to cultivate it for others. And there's a wonderful loop, kind of reciprocal relationship that goes on between doing this kindness practice towards oneself, being kind towards oneself, and that makes it easier to be kind towards others. And then being kind towards others hopefully makes it easier to be kind towards yourself. And eventually, as the practice of loving kindness gets very strong, the very sense of self and other begins to dissolve and fall away. And it's quite something to have an experience of love, of kindness, that is not directed towards any person at all, but seems to be all-encompassing. There's no kind of self and other separation going on. It's just this wonderful feeling of open-heartedness that is extensive and inclusive and all that. So those are some of my thoughts around this. And those of you who might be inspired, I'd encourage you during the week to at least do that first reflection that I suggested, which is when you're with someone, turn your mind to consider what would be best for the person I'm with. What would be the most supportive and helpful? What would bring this person the best, most welfare in? So kind of turn your thoughts to that kind of goodwill and see what happens when you have that kind of question. And see what happens when you do it repeatedly through the day. And then if you want to take the advanced course, then you act on that. And see if you can do something for the other people. So we have a few minutes here. Anybody like to ask any questions or have any comments or testimonials about loving kindness? Yes, if you could please wait for the mic. And the reason for the mic is that some people have trouble hearing. They have hearing assistant devices. And some people listen to these talks on the Internet, and that's where they can hear the questions.
Can you hear me? Okay. So hearing about that makes me sort of reminds me of relationship counseling that I've had over the years, in which I've been in various relationships, including one pretty recently, where I think we've really tried to be very loving and kind to each other, but there's this golden rule of treat other people the way you would want to be treated, which sounds like it would work pretty well until you find out that not everyone wants to be treated the same. And we both discovered during this process that despite our best intentions, what we thought the other person wanted wasn't necessarily what they really wanted.
Yeah, that wouldn't have worked on my first date.
Yeah. And so I guess that's just, I guess it's mostly a comment. It seems like a good starting place to think, what does this person want, and to try to act on that. But I've been surprised over the years that what I think someone wants isn't always what they really do want. Maybe the clerk really doesn't want you to ask them how they are. You know, maybe they want you to get the heck out of it. I mean, yeah. You know, and I guess my only, you know, comment, and I'll turn it into a question, is, you know, what's the best way to incorporate, you know, it seems like there has to be some two-way communication for that to be really effective. And what are your thoughts on how to make sure it's not just assumptions that we're making about what other people want?
Right. I remember when I was in college, I somehow got this idea of being, I should be kind. And I remember meeting this fellow student, a woman in the library stairwell. And I think she left feeling disgusted. You know, my kindness was so, you know, utterly sweet and artificial or something. I think none of these practices, none of this should be done without paying careful attention to ourselves, our motivation, what we're doing, why we're doing it, and also what the consequences are. And I mean, the first kind of, I would think, the golden rule of being kind to others is to pay attention to them, find out what's going on there, and really and the subtle cues, the verbal, the not verbal cues, and you get a sense, you know, pretty quickly, oh, this person doesn't want any further contact, or, you know, this is all they want. So you have to kind of understand the circumstances, and if you're blinded by what you think is supposed to be happening and not paying attention to circumstances, you'll probably make a lot of mistakes. There's no rules of how to do it, but paying careful attention. It's like the story, I think a story has to do with a husband who goes to the rabbi and says, you know, I'm in trouble with my marriage. And the rabbi says, oh, you should go back and listen to your wife. And so after a few weeks, the husband comes back to the rabbi and said, you know, I've been listening to my wife, but it didn't really help. And the rabbi said, oh, no, you're not supposed to listen to what she says. You're supposed to listen to what she's not saying. So, and that takes, you know, wisdom and care and a lot of experience. Now, one of the ways to shortcut all this is if it's appropriate for the person, is you ask them. You talk. there's a big difference between having kind thoughts or having goodwill for someone and acting on it. But I wouldn't underestimate the value of having that goodwill. Sometimes it's just enough that someone feels your goodwill. You know, just that makes a big difference for some people. Yes, here in the front.
Follow on what this conversation, I think part of it also to me is I watch what I expect from me being kind, and when I'm conscious, I try to. That was my expectation. It's not necessarily what this other person is going to respond.
So you pay attention to what you expect.
Right, as being kind, and I may have, you know, I expect, you know, she's going to jump and give me a big kiss or something.
Yes.
But that was my expectation, and I know if that didn't happen, I still feel like that's okay.
Beautiful. Yeah, so be very careful with the expectation and maybe not have any expectation.
Right.
At least what you're going to get. There's two kind of, in the Buddhist tradition, two examples are given for loving kindness. One is friendship. It's kind of friendliness, kind of the way you'd feel towards a really good friend. That feeling is what you want to develop for all people, so that all people, in some certain kind of way, you have this very friendly attitude towards. The other example is that of a mother. Classically, it's towards a mother towards her only child. And the feeling of kind of giving oneself over completely for the welfare of someone else, as you do for a young child, your only baby or something. And I thought it was quite beautiful and instructive to me when I had babies. That it was a little bit surprised the first time I had a baby. I have two kids. Was how when I, as a parent that when I had babies, I didn't matter anymore. there was something really right about, you know, I didn't think I was particularly selfish before, but it was like there was no, being self-centered wasn't in the game, wasn't in the equation. It's like, you know, I couldn't care less about me. 2 o'clock at night, you know, and babies throwing up and, you know, getting, you know, worried about getting enough sleep or, you know, concerned about, you know, my clothes dirty or rumpled when I go see my, you know, it's all these things just fall away. And all these things, all these self kind of concerns, having them fall away so thoroughly in having this baby was really interesting. And it taught me something about the quality of selfless love that's possible. As the kids got older, it wasn't healthy anymore for the family structure, family system, for me to not count anymore. It's actually, I had to learn to count in order to create a healthy child. So it isn't that we're supposed to be completely selfless, but there's something very instructive and very powerful for the inner system to know what it feels like to have let go of self-concern in a very radical way. And if you've never had that experience through meditation or through other kinds of things, I think it's one of the great values of hopefully any spiritual practice, that spiritual practice helps us to have an experience of radically dropping self-concern, self-centeredness, self, and then it comes back often. But then to know this other side, to open those channels, to open that possibility, it sometimes can change the game dramatically, how we live our lives. It certainly makes it a lot easier to feel kindness. So then I'll end with the famous quote from Aldous Huxley. I hopefully have it right. But he was a man who studied the wisdom traditions, wrote about spiritual traditions, was a very wise man in many ways. And apparently at his deathbed, someone asked him, you've studied all these wisdom traditions, you have all this wisdom, you've written books on this topic, do you have any last things you want to say before you die about wisdom or life or something? And he said something like, yes, it's important to be kind. So may we all learn wise kindness. So thank you.